Hello there, friends, and welcome to Down the Yellow Brick Pod, your enchanted passport and sometimes twister over the rainbow and down a yellow brick rabbit hole as we pull back the curtain on American culture's most visited fairyland. We are your co-hosts, Tara
and MK, your good trouble witches of the concrete jungle, here to preserve the rustic emeralds of yesteryear and reimagine an Oz for today and future generations. This season, our third, we return to BOM and the turn of the 20th century, finishing up our remaining 13 books in the original Oz series, penned by first royal historian of Oz himself, L. Frank Baum, and published between 1904 and 1920 posthumously.
And then we return to Oz, taking up residency in Disney's dark, disturbing, and kind of delayed fantasy sequel of the Kinder Trauma Age, scarring viewers since 1985, a near 50 years after the MGM release. Wheelers and shock therapy and screaming heads. Oh my, we are in for a wild ride. Buckle up, babies.
Off the pod, feel free to visit our Insta at Down the Yellow Brick Pod for an accompanying Technicolor scrapbook, as well as our Patreon Pod Squad, where we continue the escapism and entertainment with bonus content from Tiny Oz concerts, think coffee shop style covers and mashups of Aussie tunes, our Yellow Brick vlogs, exclusive episodes, monthly parties with occasional special guest drop-ins and giveaways, and more behind-the-scenes shenanigans. As a community-funded podcast, our Patreons are truly our backbone, our people. So consider joining our Pod Squad today. It would make our day.
Now, may the world of Oz continue to be a bewitching escape in bewildering years. Nostalgic and nuanced, and a magical refuge where two gals in New York City can cross yellow brick roads with wonders like you. Hey, Em, to Oz?
To Oz! Today's special guest co-host is the incredible friend of the pod, Patrick Clanton. Patrick is a New York City-based singer, dancer, and actor who has traveled the world in the international and national tours of Sister Act, the first national tour of School of Rock, was a part of the Voices of Liberty at Epcot in Walt Disney World, has worked at theaters such as North Carolina Theater, Flat Rock Playhouse, Casa Manana, North Shore Music Theater, and so many more, y'all. He's a star. He also created his own YouTube channel, Behind the Magic, where he dives into the history of Disney, Broadway, and more. And in very exciting news, Patrick will be making his Broadway debut in the musical Moulin Rouge this spring. Congratulations, Patrick! Hello, dear listeners. Hey, Tara Tag.
Hey, MK.
Hey, returning guest of the pod, Patrick Clanton.
Hello, my wonderful friends.
Patrick, we are so glad you're back. You're like a VIP of the pod. We are so happy that you joined us.
We've dragged you into the books.
I know.
Here we are. Sorry. It's the new world. No.
Sorry, Patrick.
It's great. I thoroughly enjoyed reading this. It was so much fun. I laughed quite a few times.
Same.
We'll get
into it. I laughed.
But
it's a silly,
I was
book.
Pleasantly surprised. I'm like, okay, L. Frank, you funny.
He punny.
Okay, L. Frank, we see you. Well, we're so glad you're back. Yeah, I cannot wait to talk about this book. It's a wild one, as they all are. But I wanted to throw out a question to y'all to kick us off. So as we know, one of the main characters, if not villain, reformed villain, is our dear Gnome King, who has been renamed, which I absolutely loved, Ruggedo. Ruggedo. He formerly was Raquette, Raquois, and now he's Ruggedo. So something that stuck out to me in the book was the fact that he has this cavern of jewels and diamonds and riches already underground, but he's not satisfied with what he already has. He has this, literally what I thought. Thank you so much, Tara. We are soulmates. Yes, because that's what I thought was like, he is still not satisfied, even though he does have this whole cavern of riches and he wants to conquer the earth so that he can have more. Like, he'll never be satisfied unless he has the utmost of the thing that he desires. And so I was kind of twisting it a little bit of like, I have a little bit of empathy for him. And I was just wondering, is there anything in your life currently or in the past where you might already have something, but you're like, no, it's not good enough until I get like the most, or I am number one. This could be a deep question. It could be silly, you know, ice cream. I want all the ice cream. But I was just wondering if there's something that you related to Ruggedo, our kind of villain with this book.
I mean, yes, I love this question, Em. I was listening to We Can Do Hard Things, Glennon Doyle's podcast, and she had Elizabeth Gilbert on this past week that we are recording this right now. Elizabeth Gilbert is one of my favorite authors of all time, and she has been through it recently, lost the love of her life to cancer, and also like they had the struggles of addiction, and that's just like a very heart thrust out conversation. And she has been talking about her recent awakening as a human being, her recent like just acknowledgement of her sex and love addiction that she grabs onto for herself, and just talking about the ego. If ego is leading, you are always going to be dissatisfied. And that's what I think of with Ruggedo. I think of like, he's never going to be satisfied because it's all egotistical gain for him. And anytime my ego is where all my goals are being generated from, there's always a twinge of like yucky, you know, or just like, I can't ever just be grateful for what I have. I guess like how I feel like this, I think I feel this a lot with my acting career, to be honest, because so much of it does feel like you have to put yourself first. And like, I don't know, like it's sometimes I don't feel the communal aspect of like going after acting goals, you know, like it does feel like there's always something better. There's always something more. And that's, I think, the curse of like ladder climbing too, you know, or whatever we envision as ladder climbing. And I know for me, I think this will be a lifetime practice, is like, I rather surrender to cyclical living where things are more in cycles and you appreciate seasons for what they are. We don't just value summer seasons, which I think egos only value like spring and summers, and kind of deny autumns and winters, you know? So I definitely feel like you know, y'all, sometimes like right now I'm wearing this sweatshirt from Children's Fairyland that Em and I have talked about, that I found online because I felt such a connection to this little sweet like mom and pop amusement park. Sometimes I feel like I could just be content with like, I don't know, like being the village witch, essentially, not like the city superstar, but then my ego like gets like, but don't you want that? Like, don't you want that? And I'm like, I do. But like, you know, like it's that constant like ebb and flow. Like what, I don't think egos are bad either too. I want to make sure, like, I think it is good to have goals and wants, but if it's the only thing running the show, I just feel like there is this sense of like, you're going to be the Gnome King then. Like, and I think we get to see him, like, I love how, where this book takes him, where he can't exit because the jewels are weighing him down.
I know. There's a metaphor there, right?
Right. Like, he can't get out of his own, like, entrapment in a way. Like, he can't even escape. And he realizes, like, what am I doing? Like, the things that I want weigh me down. Like, what am I doing? So
that, like, hit me.
Yeah.
He's so cute in that moment, too. That little illustration of, like, all of all of his like pockets,
I know,
being stuck behind me. He's like, ooh, like he can't move forward. I just want to hug him.
And isn't it Betsy and someone else like Bob's. Help him. They're like, we'll carry your jewels for you.
I know. Bets Bobs is like the most forgiving. I love Bets Bobs.
Bets Bobs.
But anyways, I won't take up any more time with this question. I don't know where I land. Like, I totally feel him. I feel our sweet Gnome King. Well, he's not sweet. He's an abusive a-hole sometimes.
Yeah, he is. He is violent.
I love to like always say, like, didn't I say like, oh, he didn't do last episode. I was like, wasn't that bad. You're like, Tara, he literally kidnapped an entire royal family in Oz and Oz and turned them into ornaments. I was like, yeah, oh, right.
He imprisons people, but yeah, you know.
He's sly. Patrick.
Tara, I loved that. Yeah. Patrick, we want to hear. Yeah. How do you feel?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like that desire to be either the best or to have the best has kept me back from things because at a certain point you go, well, if I can't be the best or have the best of this particular thing, then I just don't even want to do it at all. You know, like, for example, I mean, Tara, obviously you brought up like our acting careers. Like even with my little YouTube channel, I feel like anytime I've made a video and it didn't really do that well, or like I felt like it should have been bigger, like more people should have seen it. I'm like, well, if I can't have like a massive amount of followers, if I can't have a massive amount of subscribers, if like there aren't just like hundreds of thousands of people watching these videos, then like, why am I doing it? You know, like and there are other theater-based YouTube channels, obviously, and a lot of them have, I look at their subscribers, and I'm like, well, why can't I have that? Like, what's wrong with mine? And it's like, there's nothing wrong with yours. It's just, A, some of them, like, started at earlier than you did.
Yes, correct.
B, like, they're giving something differently than you are. It's like, it's that thing about, like, you can't focus on anyone else's journey but your own. Because once you do, and once you start comparing and contrasting what other people have rather than what you have and, like, just being content with what you have, that's what drags you down and prevents you from receiving what the blessing, the gift that you are going to get. And that is, and that someone else will look at your life and be like, oh, well, why don't I have that? Why don't I have what he has? Why don't I have what she has? It's this game that we always play that for some reason we never learn how to really break out of. I feel like we're always stuck wanting more. We're always all of the, like you said, the things that we want always tend to drag us down, and you know, we can't leave our own kingdoms. Right. Eggs block us from leaving our kingdoms.
The eggs, just some. We've all got our eggs.
We all have our eggs.
Hard boiled eggs.
We all have our eggs, truly.
Not in a basket.
Yes.
Wow. I love what you just said too, Patrick, just about like so much of this though is based off of like us comparing, obviously, like we talk a lot about that on here. I think it comes up all the time to like optics though, like just to what our interpretation of what is being presented on somebody else and then comparing ourselves to that. So that's just such an untrusty system too, that we tend to use of like, oh, these numbers must mean this. And I do think if we base everything off of like numbers, like look at like our stock market, like right now, it like, whoa, soaring down. So like things, like numbers go on roller coasters, I think always, like in life. So if we base things off of those numbers, then we're going to be taking a lot of, you know, I think hard dives. I just think it's interesting that I think a lot of our success is based off of optics, based off of numbers, like we, like just societally. I think it takes a lot of people to do their own like internal work to redefine success for themselves and then not get distracted by the success we see projected by everybody else. Right. Like that's the work. Yeah. I think that is the work. And like, I think our Gnome King is about to start doing that work. Maybe for himself. Maybe,
we'll see.
Maybe a sweet relationship with Betsy Bobbins will mean more than being an a-hole ruler of a underground world. Like maybe having a sweet little companion that he actually cares for and like loves because she fights back and like he loves that about her. Maybe that will mean more than all the rubies and all the gems in the world, you know?
Right. Yeah, that makes me think, like, what I'm thinking of is the intention behind what you desire and what you want, because that's also a theme in this book. There's like a whole conversation where they're like, we shouldn't desire things because it's bad. And there was that little debate later on that also struck me. And I know, Tara, you and I have talked about this with theater of like being competitive with yourself. Like there does have to be this drive that you have, even not just theater, but to like go after the things that you want. There does have to be some sort of motivation. And I always try to check myself of like, yeah, are you motivated by like what it looks like to the outside world? Or is it truly motivated by... because this is what brings you life and like this is what you feel like you're supposed to do with your life.
But like what if I get joy from like other people looking at
it? I know. That's true too. And that's why I love this conversation and why I have these conversations with people a lot, because like it's not bad to also want things or to want to feel, you know, successful in what you do. Like that's great, but I think it is for me personally, it is a constant like going inward again and just checking in and knowing like I'm a person first, and going back to that, what you were saying, Patrick, of like the comparison games, I think is what it all comes down to for me. Is I've been trying for years to stop this thought process in my head where I'll find myself in like a really happy situation or something great is happening.
Yes.
And then I'll be like, oh, but if only I had more money, it would be even better. Or like if my hair looked better, it would be better. Or if I was on Broadway, it would be better. You know, like there's always something where you're like, but why can't you just be happy with where you are? And I'm not saying this always happens, but it's like this funny little thought pattern that kind of sneaks up. And I think that's what's happening to him.
And like, that was beautifully stated. Thank you for everything that you just shared. And like, it's also, I think all of us have to acknowledge, it's not all of our faults for feeling this internal conflict. Like, look at what our society holds up. Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, you know, doing like whatever they want with all the money in the world and like not being held accountable for actually doing good to the world, just kind of like, you know, whatever. So I think we have to remind ourselves that too. Like, we're kind of up against, I think, everything that wants to take us out. This is what I really believe. I hope this comes out of my mouth the way I want it to. I think what we're always up against is like coming home to ourselves, right? Because if we continue to not come home to ourselves, we spend money on things, we keep the economy alive because we're going to be seeking beauty products, we're going to be seeking books, we're going to be like, you know, just going to keep seeking out of ourselves. But if we come into ourselves, oh, breathe, because that's free, right? Breathing. I mean, breathing should be free to every single human. Right. Coming back to our breath, coming back to like, how do I listen to myself? Which none of us have the tools. We've never really learned. It's like a very uncomfortable process. But if we do that and get good at that, we don't need all that stuff. That's what's crazy.
And then the economy will be changed forever.
The world that we have created does not make sense anymore. And that's why I think right now we're witnessing it. Like people are coming to some realizations that like we did, I think in the pandemic, a lot of us did like, oh, I don't need to spend all this money. I don't, you know, like I think it was happening, but now it's like we're back into like the economy, keeping that afloat, boss lady energy, like all these kinds of things that like we say are like, yeah. And I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm like, it takes me away from coming home to myself a lot of the time too. So what is that balance of like being a part of this, participating in the world that we are in, this culture we are in, and also acknowledging like a lot of it's a joke. You know, or like,
well, I think that happens to the Gnome King, because that moment when he's like, yeah, I need all of these, and he puts them in his pocket, and then he can't even walk, you know,
the poor baby.
Yeah,
poor baby. No, I like I love the Gnome King so much. I really, really loved him in this book. I think he is my MVP for this book.
MVP.
He had the line that really made me laugh a lot.
Well, thank you both for giving such thoughtful responses. I'm excited to dive more into this book. So we will see you very soon, listeners.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Book 8, TikTok of Oz. We're so happy to be in this book. It was published on June 19th, 1914. And though TikTok is kind of a supporting character, if you will, with some comedic bits, the book is named after him. This would probably, if I had to pick, I'd probably say this is like Shaggy's story. Like at the core, and Betsy, like it's like two vagabonds of different ages finding each other and calling each other home. Like that's what this book is about. But like TikTok, I don't really
know. I was going to ask you guys, like, what you would name this, because I agreed. I was like, wait, I mean, he's there for sure. But
I mean, it's fine. I'm fine with the title of this book. I think TikTok is great. And he is prominent in a few key points. So I can go. I can go with it. Get behind
it. He also keeps tripping, which I really feel for him. Mm-hmm. He like keeps falling.
I mean, he's massive ball of copper, right? He's made of copper. I mean, yeah, if I was as round as him, I would probably have a hard time standing up as well.
But he does his hold. Like, how amazing to have this army, this, you know, this robot who is so, like, he follows orders. And I give him so much for that. TikTok is a very interesting character. I love him dearly. We don't dive deep into his character at all in this book.
No.
But yeah, I still love this story, and I'm excited that we get to chat about it today. So before we get into history and start rolling, why don't we set everyone up with what this book is generally about with our bullet points? Em, you have the first bullet point. Would you like to start us off?
I have to say off the bat, this might be my longest.
Oh. No, really?
No.
Wow.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Really?
I'm like, Tara's trying to
like, actually,
no,
I know.
No, but it's for me too. Like, mine have gotten so long, but I'm like, no, I know. You don't need that. You could talk about that later.
I know. I usually do that. And this time I just let myself run wild.
Baby, but you have the top, though. The top is like when you got to get all the characters.
You
got to
get all the, Yeah. Thank you, Tara, for validating.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say, I thought of you, Tara, because every single chapter is alliteration.
Yes!
Every single chapter. I love it so much.
I love it so much, too. Okay, go ahead.
Well, here we go. You ready for this? Y'all ready?
Yes.
Do you love a prologue that tells you how the story you are about to read ends? Then this is the book for you! L. Frank Baum sets the scene to tell his tale of Queen Anne of Soforth, the Queen of Oogaboo, the poorest and smallest kingdom in a corner of the Land of Oz, who doesn't enjoy domestic duties or being bossed around by her sister, Salye.
I thought it was maybe, is it Salye or Salye?
Oh, Salye. It's S-A-L-Y-E. Salye? That's cute.
Salye. Like Salye.
Salye.
Oh,
so it would sound like Salye Soforth.
Oh my God. You're genius.
Like, you know, like Salye Forth, right?
Salye Forth.
Maybe.
Tara.
I don't know if that's right.
That?
No, that's what I heard in my head when I read
that's
her
actually
name.
That's actually amazing.
That might not, no, that might not be right.
Who knows? Well, she does not like being bossed around. When Salye teases her, telling her, "Why don't you go form an army and go conquer the Land of Oz?" Queen Anne assembles an army of Joes to go conquer Oz, the world, and then the moon, which she says will be easy. Making Joe Files, who has trees of files and books, of course, her private soldier. Assembling in her fierce green ensemble before her newly formed army, Anne and party traveled down a pass to cross over into the Land of Oz. But the ever-watchful eye of Glinda discovers their intentions, and with a little magic causes the path to morph and lead them to an adjoining territory separated from Oz by an invisible border. After 3 days of finding no one to conquer, a fog descends upon the party, and all are enveloped by a creature known as the Rack, a creature that can fly in the air, run like a deer, and swim like a fish, who breathes out smoke and smells distinctly of salt and pepper. But all danger is avoided when Files shoots at the Rack, violent, and the Rack sadly lets them pass as he doesn't want to keep them from their prior engagement.
Meanwhile, in a deja vu moment, a young girl named Betsy Bobbins and a mule named Hank are caught in a storm and wash up on shore, eventually discovering a greenhouse where dozens of roses speak to them, their faces that of real lovely ladies, leading to an upset royal gardener trying to kick them out. But not before our old friend, the Shaggy Man, crashes through the ceiling. Sharing that he seeks the hidden passage to the underground cavern of the terrible metal monarch, where his poor brother has been held captive for years. Boo. And using his love magnet, forces the royal gardener to take them to the royal gardens, where they see a beautiful royal princess who, in another moment of deja vu, is plucked by Betsy and Shaggy Man, much to the chagrin of the heartless roses, who force our friends out by poking them with their thorns, where we find out the princess's name is Ozga, and she is actually a cousin of Ozma. All agree to help Shaggy Man find his brother and quickly meet Polychrome, who once again was dancing on the rainbow and fell to the ground, now stuck on the earth. And she quickly agrees to aid in their journey, becoming fast friends with Ozga, who is now mortal, and soon discover a well where they lower a hook and raise an old friend to the surface. It's our title character, TikTok, who was transported by Glinda to help Shaggy Man in his rescue mission, but was thrown down into the well when Ruggedo, the newly renamed Gnome King, discovered him. Quickly, the sound of an army is heard and flags are staked, with Queen Anne claiming she is going to conquer our friends and commanding Files to bind them hand and foot. But he insists it would be quite impolite towards the ladies and resigns from his position, leading Anne to command her army to capture Files. But all are quickly entranced by the love magnet, even Anne, and Shaggy makes a deal. If Anne's army helps them to conquer Ruggedo, they will give one half of the jewels to Anne, the other half to the soldiers, and the rest, how does this add up, to TikTok, our newly appointed private soldier, who wisely knows his worth and inquires if he gets a salary. I get it, TikTok. With Files coming up with... Do I get paid? With Files coming up with the brilliant idea for Ozga to speak to her relatives, the flowers on the nearby path, who lean towards the right and nod for our party to find Ruggedo and Shaggy Man's brother on the path ahead.
Oh, man. That was stunning.
That was a long one. Excellent. There's so much. There's so many characters.
You reminded me of Files' sudden change of heart, which I had forgotten about.
Right.
Like how he went from being like,
yeah, violence.
Violence, guns. Yep. And then he's like, oh, women. Okay.
We can't do that to the ladies.
Right. He like completely changes course, which is very funny. I think I could see that being a really fun character choice on stage, which we'll talk 100%. About. Lots yes. of stage feelings in this mm-hmm. book because this came from a stage play. And I love, you reminded me also of the fact that like Polychrome and Shaggy Man suddenly don't know who each other are, though they've met.
Thank you. There are a lot before. Of inconsistencies in this Ooh. Book that I'm excited to talk about. Yeah, they're just like, wait, not. Who are you?
And then there's not. Like, and then Baum does a good job of also retracing his book steps and connecting some dots and then just doesn't. Like, why does Polychrome not recognize Shaggy? That's beyond me.
We do not know.
They're friends, Patrick. They knew each other. They've been on an adventure before. They
went to a birthday
before.
Party.
They went to Ozma's sick birthday. Like
sick
birthday. Like, this is annoying to me. That yeah,
they partied with Santa.
They partied with Santa, and they're acting like we don't know each other now. Real cute.
Excuse me? I would be offended.
All right. Bullet point two. Okay, I haven't read this out loud yet, so let's see how it rolls off the tongue. Below in the underground world, it's who's this? The renamed Ruggedo. I'm going to say Ruggedo. The monarch of metals, smacking gongs. Who gave that man a gong? And scheming in his abusive and atrocious behaviors to take down his intruders crossing from rubber country, ordering magic decoys by the chief magician, finally deciding to plummet the lot down the hollow tube, not at the advisement of his high chamberlain, Kaliko, who has the same name that he had in the book.
Right. Before. He has the same name. Oh, but my God, you're right. We'll but he fell in that. The fountain.
But yeah, he fell in the fountain too that made them forget everything. We'll talk about it. Who warns Ruggedo that he will make someone named Titty Hoochoo very angry, but he does it heed the advice, and nevertheless, the tube becomes the Earth's longest tunnel slide for our travelers, banishing them to the other end of the world of more invisible kings and queens and a gardener named Tubekins, Teletubbies, that's what makes me think of, who takes them to meet the ruler, the private citizen, Jinjin, or Tititi Hoochoo. Why so many names? Who agrees to offer hospitality to our friends and punish Ruggedo. Betsy and Polychrome, enchanted by Queen Irma during their stay, the lovely lady of night, and her six lovely maidens, we'll learn more about them to come, learning also of the land's connection to dragons. And the next day, our friends all getting to ride one for themselves named Quox? Question mark?
Quox?
Like a Quox? Jungle. Say it. How did you say it?
I thought it was Quox, but I guess you could be like Quox.
I read it as Quox. I'll tell you why later.
Quox. Okay. Quox. Our friends all getting to ride one themselves named Quox, like a jungle cruise back through the tube to seek vengeance on Ruggedo at Jinjin's order. But Ruggedo uses his magical spyglass and the long-eared listener to stay one step ahead. But their plan of attack doesn't quite work as the dragon defies danger, name of a chapter, soaring higher than the gnome army can reach and taking our friends to safety. Feels very Game of Thrones in this moment. TikTok ordered to lead an attack on the gnomes by Queen Anne, whom all instantly retreat into their caverns, even though TikTok faceplants. Shaggy planning to use his love magnet on the gnomes when the opportunity strikes. Quox taking a nap until he is needed. But then, oh no, Ruggedo tricks Queen Anne and her army to fall into a pit while TikTok falls down yet again, but not after Hank the Mule kicks them where it hurts. And Betsy and Hank are shuffled to safety by an inside alley Coleco, while Files, Shaggy, Polychrome, and the Rose Princess wait outside.
Jungle Cruise Quox.
Whoa.
I love the illustration where they're
I know.
On the dragon's riding him. It's so good. And like the flag that's like oogaboo.
Oogaboo.
In the sky, like they've conquered the dragon too. I love oogaboo. We'll get more.
Oogaboo's great.
Patrick, take us home, baby.
Okay. Okay. Let me first say I did my bullet points with those, like, when we did them for the Wiz, we did like titles for each one. So I have my little headlining titles.
Breaking news.
First one. No love, no dragon, no chance. The Shaggy Man talked too much about his love charm in front of the guard who is right next to the long-eared hearer. Long-eared And is rendered useless by the gnomes. And Quox has fallen asleep, so now our heroes are on their own and will have to figure out a way to defeat the Gnome King without the help of their incredibly convenient plot devices. Or so it seems. Quox to the rescue! Just when it seems all hope is lost, Quox bursts in to save the day, using the magic ribbon around his neck to strip the Gnome King Ruggedo of his magical powers, and unleashes walking eggs from around his neck to banish the Gnome King from his kingdom and turning Ozga and the Shaggy Man back into their normal selves because he turned them into a fiddle.
This is what he likes to do.
He just likes to turn people into things.
Transformations.
Yes. Oh, brother, where art thou? The new Gnome King, Calico, helps Calico?
I like Calico.
Calico's cute, like a calico cat.
Okay. Calico helps the Shaggy Man find his brother, who has been transformed by Ruggedo into the homeliest man in the world.
Quote.
But
the ugly one.
With a kiss from Polychrome, he is transformed back into his handsome self. And the banquet is thrown in the Gnome Kingdom to celebrate. Last book. Toto says, what? Back in the land of Oz, Betsy meets Ozma and Dorothy, who explain to Betsy that all animals can talk in the land of Oz, including Hank, but not Toto for some reason. But as it turns out, Toto can talk and has just chosen not to speak until this point, which is honestly the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's how I ended it.
I mean,
oh my gosh,
we've so love much a headline. To discuss my friend.
Toto.
That blew my mind. I was like, wait, what?
Toto says what?
And like as you mentioned, I have not read any of the other books, so going into this one, it was wild. Like you mentioned, I did get like Game of Thrones kind of vibes, like with all these different lands and all of these like there's war. I was just shocked from chapter one that we were going to war. I was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a thing in these books.
Wars are running in these books. Running rampant in these books. But Baum always offers, I think, his unique opinions about war and kind of the senselessness of war all the time in it.
Throughout,
throughout any wars that arise in the books, he always has a very anti-war, I think, you know, sprinkling on top of it, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Because Baum was born
for it.
Baum was born at the during reparations of the Civil War. I'm pretty sure. He was born like witnessing a lot of men come home without limbs. Like that was a norm of his existence, which that is wild to just whoa. And you know, I think just war is always, it's always been a constant. It's never not been. I mean, look at where we're at right now. Like it's always happening.
So. I think they say that in the book too. They like look through the spyglass and they're like, there's another war happening. There's always a war.
There's always a war.
I was like, yeah, that's true.
It is true, which is very sad.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the history of this book. This immediately follows Patchwork Girl of Oz. And a lot of the characters from Patchwork Girl are in this. We're kind of going back to some early faves. And the reason of this is that this is actually based off of a longly workshopped musical by L. Frank Baum and different collaborators at different times. Em and I are going to dive more into this musical that was eventually titled The TikTok Man of Oz that debuted in 1913, did not have a successful Broadway transfer as hoped. Apparently, though, people loved it. Like their reviews were a little bit varying, but the box office numbers were phenomenal. So it seems like there maybe was a producer that was distracted, that was in charge of this piece. It just was like, you know what, we're going to let it stop, as opposed to like put all faith and energy in taking it further. So it never made it to the Great White Way. But apparently, people are still obsessed with it. There's so much to be found online. There was a remounting at an Oz Con, the Winky, I think, convention that happened in 2014 that had a Kickstarter campaign about it. Found all the songs, got a script intact for it to be heard again, which is always so fun to find these like relics from the past and try to make sense of them today. So TikTok Man of Oz, we'll get more into that on a later date, existed before this and was kind of this like strung together. It had different titles at first. It was first called Ozma of Oz and various other things.
Rainbow's Daughter.
The Rainbow's Daughter.
Also called at one point.
And like the Love Magnet was a part of the title too. Like there's so much there. So it's a lot of our characters from Ozma of Oz and Road to Oz. Those are like the prime suspects and a lot of themes from Dorothy and the Wizard in Oz. Those are books 3 through 5 that the musical is pulling from. And apparently the reason why we have so many characters who are similar to other characters from Oz books past, like Betsy Bobbs, is that Baum couldn't use Dorothy in the musical because of rights issues. So that's interesting. And also he loved the name Betsy. He had characters in past books named like Betsy Barker. I think he had a Betsy Barker before.
Baker.
Yeah, Baker. Thank you. Oh my gosh. I just named her like Sweeney Todd's
Betsy
daughter.
Barker.
Betsy Barker. Isn't that like Sweeney Todd's last name? It's Barker, right?
I think so.
Yes. So yeah, it's interesting. Like General Ginger is supposed to be Queen Anne. Like things like that. So we have a lot of similar characters. Ozga is supposed to just be Ozma.
Wow.
like there's just like little things here and there.
You had to get around those rights, you know?
So, yeah, rights issues. So in the play, the ending where they go and meet Dorothy and Ozma, that probably doesn't happen.
I actually no.
Most likely not.
I don't know. I don't know if we end the same way with like Toto speaking. I'm sure that's not a part of it. The big things that are not in the musical is the whole tunnel with the dragon to Titi, what is his name?
Titi Hoochoo.
Titi Hoochoo. That's all cut. Cut. That's not in the stage musical. But what's interesting, this is the first time we're seeing Baum pull from stage canon first to make a book. As opposed to book into stage musicals, stage extravaganza. And we're also in the time period right now in the 19 teens where musical extravaganzas are fading. They're not what the people want anymore. These like big fairy tale spectacles, people are starting to lose interest. So theater is in a turning point. So it kind of hit at the wrong time. Just a little bit about the musical. This is from our favorite, The Real Wizard of Oz, The Life and Times of L. Frank Baum by Rebecca Longcrane. She says about the production, which debuted at the Majestic Theater in Los Angeles in March 1913, that it included impressive sets and effects. A metal monarch's jeweled cavern glowed with electric lights pushed through false gems, and a rainbow was projected onto the stage by refracting light through a glass prism. And it had a pretty short but successful run in San Francisco, like we were talking about. But then when it hit Chicago, that's where it kind of lost its steam. And Baum, though, was just like in his element. He was give talkbacks before and after the show.
Oh, like, he loved this, I'm sure.
Loves it so much. And then when the musical did not get the journey that they had hoped, he decided to adapt it into the book that we are reading. And Rebecca notes in here, I mean, there's a lot to talk about with this book. This is the first time we see a map of Oz. First time a map is included.
This is a wild bit.
Which he honestly needed to do because I had no clue where we went, like at the top of this. I was like, where's the Rose Kingdom?
I know. I was trying to get my bearings. Thank God
the map is there. And you can find this map. It's in public domain. It's the first map to ever exist.
Real quick about that map. The compass, it's like backwards.
Yeah.
Like the
inconsistent.
The Munchkin country is in the left, the Winky country is in the right, and the compass. But the compass, like, it says north, west. West is on the right, south is on the bottom, and then east is on the left. So it's actually incorrect.
I wonder why. I don't think anyone – I mean, I'm sure maybe someone knows. I don't know why that happened, like, if that was intentional or a mistake.
Right. Well, it does say that after that, the – like, there were versions where the publishers corrected the compass rose so that it would actually reflect like west. And then Ruth Plumly Thompson, who takes over the books afterwards, also reversed it as well. I think there's a lot of differing opinions about it. Yes. I'm sure there's someone who knows way more about this than me.
Well, this map does not only show us, if you do not know it, it shows the entire extensive regions of Baum's imaginative continent, which is true.
Yes!
He's like connecting it. The Deadly Desert goes wrapping around Oz. It's in all the different colors that the countries are known for. It's a double-page map showing Oz at the center, surrounding by the wastelands of the impassable desert, the Deadly Desert, the Great Sandy Waste, and the Shifting Sands. So we have lots of different names for this great desert that surrounds. We also see some lands we have not yet been introduced to in this map. Beyond the Deadly Deserts, there were some lands that were from other Baum books that were non-Oz stories, like the Kingdom of Ix is to the north of Oz, the Forest of Burzee is to the south of Munchkin Country, and on the very edge of the map. It's very interesting that he decided to include those in here. And then, of course, linking the country of the gargoyles back in from
the
Dorothy
Scoodlers.
And the wizard. Is that correct? The gargoyles are Dorothy and the wizard, right? That's Zeb. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And this, it's getting hard, Patrick, now to like trace, like, okay, what happened in what book? Vegetable Kingdom, all of that is on here. These are like places that we've been to and are kind of returning to. She also notes many of the territories on the 1914 map had not yet appeared in Baum's stories. So the map also signaled the direction for the future. It was a geography of future stories as well as a map of past tales, which also, if we are looking at his preface that was written at the top of this book, which the book is also dedicated to Louis F. Gottschalk.
The composer.
Was the composer of TikTok Man of Oz, which is very sweet. He also in this intro is like talking about his letters that he's getting in. Like, I hear you that you want Trot and Cap'n Bill to come to Oz. Mm-hmm. Like, I hear you that you want Button Bright to become friends with Ojo the Lucky. He's also kind of telling us like where he's going to go after this book in that preface. So the map and this preface, I think, gave readers a little like, oh, okay, he is going to do this next.
Well, also, Trot and Cap'n Bill are from Sea Fairies, which is sort of like a totally different, it's not canonical with like the 14 Oz books. So he's building a universe.
He's building a metaverse.
This is the multiverse of madness.
It is the multiverse of madness. He is Doctor Strange right now. She does know like how inconsistent this book is because he really just like lets some things go in the curating continuity, as we've been noting. But she says, in truth, these inconsistencies contributed to the power of Oz. In its inconsistencies, Oz was shown to be like the imagination itself, liquid, more like water than rock. And I love that. Thank you, Rebecca.
More like it is water true. Than rock.
Like, we can't fully remember things. You know what I mean? Like, that's why when if you're on jury duty, if you are in a court case, relying on witness testimonies is one of the rockiest
things. The most inconsistent.
You can probably do. The most consistent thing you can do is have a recording of anything that you're trying to defend.
And even then, people will be like, but I was at a different angle, so I see it this way. It's wild.
Friends, I've been doing that with Patti LuPone's recent flashback. Like, I was like, I was there. That's not everything that happened. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different...
It's the most inconsistent.
It's so crazy. So I like that she said that, though, that, like...
That's cool.
Our imaginations are liquid, so things change, right? Like, I love that. So just giving also... Baum again, like, I don't think he was super concerned about continuity. Like, I think he was more concerned about entertaining, making the books as enjoyable as possible, not maybe keeping that string from book to book to book airtight, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found some of the – there seemed to be a couple of, like, little – not full fourth wall breaks that he inserted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
was one part where the Shaggy Man – I think they're talking about his brother and, like, where his brother is. And he says something like, no one knows where he is except for the person writing this story. Or
that was like, that almost made me jump out of my skin. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, like,
we're talking about the author now.
Yeah, I was interested in that. But it's funny that you say, once again, this is something that I would know if I read the other books, that it is inconsistent. Because there also felt like there were times where he just very easily wrote something explaining something that seemed questionable, you know, that would...
He's the master of that.
Yeah, you know, I can't think of like a good example right now, but it was just times where I was like, oh, that's... It was just kind of funny, like, reading it, because it's like, you probably wouldn't be able to get away with something like that in a book meant for adults, but for a book for kids, it's like, yeah, no, this is just how it is.
Oh, like,
this is how it is. Strong and wrong.
Polychrome's kiss with the whole kissing section is wild to me.
That's a wild moment.
Polychrome's kiss of who was known in the musical as Wiggy.
Wiggy the brother. Which I actually love, because in the book I was like, I don't want to refer to him as the ugly one. Like, I just called him brother throughout my notes.
I think he's brother. Wiggy. Like,
in the end, they do kind of call him brother. Yeah. There's also like the weird thing with Shaggy Man's love magnet, whereas before people were just under the love magnet spell if they were near the Shaggy Man in the love magnet. Now he has to physically like pull it out and show it to people.
And like, why don't Hank talk as soon as he enters the fairyland? Like Hank,
right.
Oh my God. I was dying at all of the, he hawed plaintively. He hawed. Like I just imagine the way that those he-haws would sound really brought me joy.
Apparently Hank was a hit in TikTok, Man.
Hank was a hit. Audition for this role was like, can you hee-haw for us? As if you just got rejected. Like
he was like Milky White before there was ever Milky White.
Yes.
You know how, like, oh my God, yes.
Into the woods. Hey, it's such a, that
Patrick,
kind of thing.
Dorothy.
We always come back to Into the Woods.
Dorothy brings a cow to Oz instead of Toto Imogene. In the wonderful Wizard of Oz musical extravaganza.
Oh, yes.
Imogene.
Well, I have a note about that, actually. Imogene. So talking about this inconsistency with Hank the Mule. So as we know, in the original, since this was originally a stage version, it is thought that perhaps Bellina was replaced by Hank because a mule could more convincingly be played by two people in a costume. Hank probably could not talk because Baum already had two speaking comedy characters, the Shaggy Man and TikTok. Thus, Hank would fill a better niche as a visual comedy character in the tradition of British pantomime. They also make a connection between Hank being like, very similar to Dorothy's cow Imogene, kind of Toto's replacement. So you're on the right track. Like, this is just wild.
Yeah, it's all done. A lot of these characters are derived out of what was needed.
Yeah.
And like kind of the plot.
A substitute, from before times.
They're substitute teachers.
Substitute.
Love it. I have to confess something.
What?
Anytime I saw these books, like in bookstores, like, you know, I haven't really read the Oz series until now, especially right now. Where we're at in the books has surpassed where I have ever gone on my own before.
This is where I,
cut stopped. Off. I thought Betsy was Dorothy on all the covers of books. I thought that was Dorothy. I didn't know that that was a new character completely. Like Betsy Bobbins is wild to me. I was like, well, who is this? And I don't think this was intentional with Betsy. I think she becomes every kid at home who wishes they could go to Oz.
You know?
Like
she's more relatable.
She's like Dorothy. Like at the beginning when they're talking about Land of Oz, she's like, oh,
she
my
knows
gosh.
About her.
I know her from Mr. Bomb's stories. Like she could have just done that.
I've also read about her.
Also her lack of like backstory. Like I love her so much. I have to talk about this when we get there. I started casting some of the gals in the book. Based off of like if Judy Garland stayed as Dorothy, and I'll talk about who I cast.
Oh my God, that sounds fun.
In some of the other ones, because I was like, let's say this is like a 1939 movie. Like, who would I cast with the women who were up and coming at that time, like the young actresses?
Yes.
I am delighted by my casting. I cannot wait to share. Bernie, tell
I can't
Peter.
Wait to hear about that.
I cannot wait to share.
Well, speaking of Betsy Bobbin and that cover of the book. Getting a little bit into the illustrations.
Yes, please.
A little rabbit hole that I fell down is I read that the face of Betsy Bobbin on the cover is modeled after a woman named Eleanor Boardman, who was a young model and later a silent film actress.
Come on.
She was from Philadelphia, where John Arneil, our illustrator, was from. And she was the featured woman in the advertising campaign for Kodak. She was the Kodak girl in 1913 for Eastman Kodak's advertising posters. And I just fell down a tiny rabbit hole because she is fierce. Please look up photos of her. She was born and raised in Philly. She acted on the stage, but she somehow lost her voice while starring in a play called The National Anthem or a musical.
Me too.
I get it. I know. Apparently hers was long lasting. She then entered a nationwide contest for new actors and actresses for silent films and was chosen from among 1,000 competitors by Goldwyn Pictures as their new face of 1922. She appeared in many, many films throughout her career. And guess what? She eventually married a Wizard of Oz MGM director, King Vidor. King Vidor. Isn't this crazy?
Come on.
This is crazy.
I'm okay. She,
I know. I fell down this rabbit hole. I was like, what?
Where did you get the bite from this? This is awesome.
The Oz Wiki page. The Oz Wiki page, which is an amazing resource. I was like, wait, Kodak girl? I'm like obsessed with this. We should put some photos on the Insta.
Got you.
She parted ways with MGM in 1932. She retired from acting. She retreated from Hollywood. And she had two daughters with King Vidor. They were divorced in 1933. Wild. And fellow actors John Gilbert and Greta Garbo had allegedly planned a double wedding with them. But Garbo broke the plans at the last minute. And Tare, maybe when we go to LA next month, we should go find her star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Eleanor Boardman.
What?
Eleanor Boardman, come on.
That was a really fun rabbit hole.
Thank you, MK.
Of course.
That is a genius.
She's fierce. She's fierce.
And like, this is what I am obsessed with is like the crossover connections.
I know.
Generally, my theory is that not one of us has not done something to do with Oz in our life. Like, mm-hmm. Is that embedded in our culture? That everyone has some connection. Even if it's like you walked into a bookstore and the book fell and hit you on the head and that's it. Like those have a connection. Like
we all have something.
We all have something, which is just so crazy. Wow. Yeah. I'm obsessed.
Hey, Tare, are you an avid collector and digester of the classics?
Yes, Em. I grew up on What's the Story Wishbone.
Ooh, and are you also a sucker for a beautiful book cover?
Yes, I love Bookstagram.
Well, Tare, I couldn't recommend Wordsworth Classics more.
Ooh, tell me more, tell me more.
Not only is Wordsworth Classics eye candy, concerned with producing quality books at the lowest price possible, Wordsworth also has an assortment of different collections, from practical and paperback to collector's editions and hardcover, available for both individual purpose and for supplying schools. Released just last year in 2021 is their exclusive collection featuring a dreamy and freshly illustrated poppy field cover of, you guessed it, none other than the wonderful Wizard of Oz, Chibi Gorge, and we highly encourage you to check it out. Wordsworth Classics is a partner with UK-based Wordsworth Editions as the sole distributor of their classic books in North America. Visit at Wordsworth Classics and at Wordsworth Editions on IG for more and revisit your favorite timeless heroes and heroines again and again. Your bookshelf will also thank you.
These illustrations are not my favorite. I'm going to not lie.
No, I'm with you.
This is not John Arneil's finest, Patrick. Like, he's done better.
As someone who hadn't seen in many of the other illustrations, I was like, oh wow, for a book from like this long ago, these are neat.
No, you're not wrong. Mm-hmm. There, I mean, the dragon one I think is like
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I personally really like the black and white sketches more so than the color plates in this one.
I don't know if it's my printing, my copy. They're so hard to make out.
They're hard to see.
Yeah, like I'm having trouble like even being like, who is this?
I got you.
I love the color ones. Just to give a quick shout out, and you guys tell me if you want to add any to like the ones that you think are the best. Mm-hmm. Betsy Bobbins. I can't say her name. Betsy Bobbins and Hank at the...
I know.
Their little like portrait.
Yeah.
Coming into Oz. That is magical.
I know. That's cute. On
one
their,
of my favorites.
In the storm.
The storm? Not the storm. There's
like, oh, a different one.
It's at the end. It's with the
O-Z
hanging in the back. And
she's got her
like,
fierce hat.
Moving to Oz. Yeah, her fierce little sun hat. Mm-hmm. I also want to shout out anything to do with Quox.
I know.
And anything to do with TikTok being down and needing help up. Those illustrations are my favorite.
TikTok. I really love the illustration of Ozga talking to the flowers. Like all the flowers are like, go this way. And she's just like, okay. But honestly, my favorite was this little sketch. It's like a black and white sketch of Betsy, just her face. And she's like peering over her shoulder. And it literally says like Betsy. It looks like a headshot that she signed. You're like, okay, get it.
Betsy's like, also, I am now a character in this world that I've read about.
I'm here, honey. I know. But also this book was different from the others in that usually there's about 16 color plates and this one only has 12, I believe. So it's a little bit more sparse. Just a little bit.
Yeah, it is a little bit more sparse. They pulled back a little, I think, based on sales.
Right. Yes. Mm. I think you had mentioned last time, like, he was now competing with his earlier Oz books. Like, people were paying less money, you know, for the earlier copies. So they're like, we're not going to pay more for these later ones.
And he makes not a buck off of that. Everyone remember, he makes not a buck off of The Wizard of Oz anymore because of his bankruptcy. Not a buck.
La, la, la.
Shall we get into the text of this book and go on a wild ride?
A wild ride on the back of a dragon. Let's do it.
I share the first thing that stood out to me that I just was like dying over. Okay, so of course, like Anne's army is our first chapter. We get to know Queen Anne. And there's this little detail that I just said, wait, stop. Yet the simple folk of Oogaboo never visited Ozma. And I was like, were they not invited to Ozma's birthday party? Because that's some shade. I don't think so.
Like, she was shady.
Shade. So just noting that, like, they have
Ozma's
no
kind of clicky.
Yeah, like, they have no connection to the Emerald City. They feel very isolated. And I think isolation can cause Queen Anne's to be born, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this vengeful, I'm going to conquer everyone.
I think maybe she feels, how could you not feel left out? You know, it says, yeah, that they, like, don't communicate with her. They also had, like, this crazy thing with the king of Oogaboo.
Yeah, who, family drama.
Like, the queen was mean to him and he ran away. Like, there is some royalty drama happening in this land as well. Things are not well.
No, their parents have abandoned the throne.
Their parents abandoned them.
They're left. Queen Anne, so forth, is left to kind of pick up the pieces. And she just wants more. She's driven the same way that our gnome king is. She doesn't want to just be this little fish in a big pond, like her sister says to her. Because in the land of Oz, which is Ozma's country, you will be a nobody. While here, you are queen. Mm-hmm. And she's so mad. She's like, great, like a queen over 18 men. Like,
I know, it's not a lot of people.
Right. So again, like, it's going to our theory, though, of like numbers, right? Numbers prove success.
These are not enough followers.
These are not enough followers, is what she's saying. She is saying, I do not have my Instagram stamp, okay?
I want to be an influencer.
Yes. I also noted, I was like, but Anne, this sounds like heaven. I was like, I want this little tiny place.
Yeah,
you're saying
tiny places, I think, are great if the people are great. If those tiny places
if they're bad, then,
then it's like, and I get a sense that this land is like just kind of, I feel like there's no questioning. They just kind of, you know, exist in kind of a mundane lifestyle.
I think they're all very busy with their trees of different clocks and orchards, cheeses.
I was going to ask, is this something that is in a lot of Oz books, trees with things on them? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, this is a common theme.
Lots of meals
can grow
on trees.
Lots of different things. Meals, like lunch pail trees is the first introduction we have to this in Ozma of Oz, which is awesome. If you've seen Return to Oz, Disney's Return to Oz, the lunch pail trees are featured in that. But I really love the book tree. I thought that was so well done.
Yes. It was so creative the way that it was like if the books are too if they're not plucked right or if they're too ripe, then the book won't make sense. And it's
love that.
Like
once you read them, they like die and
That was so great. So
I'm not a fan of the gun tree.
No. Yeah, I was like,
I don't think he is either. I think he's just being like, well, if they're going to go to war, they have to have weapons.
They probably should. Right. I had a question. There's like, in this little illustration, getting a little bit ahead. So like she forms this whole army of all the men, which is really funny.
And the women are pissed.
The women are like, oh my God, no.
And she's like, too bad.
Yeah, she's not into the women at all.
She's everything though. Too bad, people.
Too bad.
I'm taking them and we're conquering.
She's kind of a kidnapper, like in a way, but, or she forces people against her. Their will.
Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's this little black and white illustration and they're all in line and there's a cat with a sign that says forward march. And I'm like, who is this cat? Fierce.
Oh yeah. The random cat. With
the random cat. There's like always a cat in some illustration in these books.
I love kind of Baum's commentary on the fact that sometimes we give titles to people and they don't actually mean anything. And they're just given to people once again to just stroke their egos.
Yes.
Ego's a big thing in this book.
Right.
Like, the more that we talk about it, the more I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah. They're like, we need someone who has this title. Even though Files eventually becomes the private soldier, but he like doesn't want to do it at first.
They just need the title to be filled, but also she kind of has to persuade them all to join. So she's like stroking their egos and making the titles on. Like she massages them to be what they want. So she's like, come on, like I just gave you the title that you want, right? Let's go. Like she's doing that. And it really is all based off of words. I mean, let's talk about Mombi back in Marvelous Land of Oz. There's the witch who's one of my favorites of that book.
She's great.
She only agrees to do certain things to become like the best sorceress, right? Like to be named like
your own gain.
Yeah, she was going to be named like a higher title than she is. But it's like she already has all that. She doesn't need that title, but it's what we always talk about. Like in our fields, people sometimes don't see you as legitimate until you have a Broadway credit. Is every one of us capable of that sitting here right now? Absolutely. Is one of us getting that to happen very soon? Absolutely. Broadway debut coming to Patrick Fan.
Oh my God.
But like, you know, sometimes that credit, like it's like, you know, you just want that thing to be like, I'm legitimate, right? Like I'm legitimate.
Right.
Trust me that I can do what I do. But you already
It's our blue check.
Yeah, it's that blue check mark. Totally.
Right.
Can we talk about how Glinda, though, plays dirty with these people?
I loved this.
She's like, you're not coming into Oz.
Oh, yeah, she was not having it. I also like, there was like this little detail that kind of gave us a little bit more info behind how this, like, ruler, how the government of Oz works, I suppose, is that Ozma cares for the people. And Glinda watches over, quote unquote, other affairs. So I found that it's like
big.
Ozma's like, I know. Ozma's just like, I throw parties. I'm hanging out with everyone, which is what I would want to do. And then Glinda's like, oh, but I actually take care of shit. Like, oh, my God, there's these people who are trying to take over. Let me do my little whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Change this pass so they can't come in. Well,
Ozma doesn't have magic like Glinda does that courses through her, right? Like Ozma has to have objects. I think Glinda has some coursing through her magic.
It appears so.
She's a witch. Ozma is not a witch.
Ozma's not a witch.
So there is that. Ozma is a royal inheritance of the throne. Like we're going to get more into her backstory, I think, as we go along. It's still kind of undefined. We know her dad was the king of Oz before the wizard overthrew him.
Can I ask a Oz novice question? So the wizard still exists?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's
there.
Redeemed. He's all redeemed and he actually can do magic. We have
so many
qualms with him because he has been given a pat on the hand because what it looks like, Patrick, is that Baum was going to make him a villain and then he got a lot of letters written in. He was going to make him a villain after Marvelous Land. There's all these hints of him having to do with the kidnapping of Ozma and hiding her and making sure the people didn't know where she was.
Kidnapper.
So he could take the throne and all of that. He legitimately kidnapped a child. And then Baum, I think, got all these letters that came in and
what are you doing?
The wizard this demoralized. So he started to redeem him, but also didn't quite
acknowledge what he had done in that last book with him. So it's very like I just feel like a cheese grater on my skin. Like when you look at the story, it's like it's like a very hurt. It's like a screechy violin. What is happening with the wizard? Because it's like
yeah, they're
oh,
like
God.
We love him,
but it's not he. It's kind of annoying that
he doesn't deserve it.
Has made it all the way to the top, and he really does not deserve it, in my opinion. This is where I'm grateful for Wicked Canon, which I can't wait for the day for that, because like Wicked mm-hmm. Canon totally makes the wizard be a villain.
Yeah,
which mm-hmm. I love. I love that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of Wicked, I mentioned the reason that I pronounced Quox like Quox is because yeah. they say it in Wicked. He says, Dr. Dillman says, I've heard of an ox, a professor from Quox, no longer permitted to teach.
Oh,
so in Wicked, Quox is a place, but that's when I read that, I was like, is that where he got that name?
Probably.
Is that where Gregory
Maguire
got that name?
Gold star of the pot.
Gregory Maguire and Jeffrey. Stephen Schwartz both went back to like,
oh my God, what a great rhyme.
That's amazing. I
yep,
love it.
I'm here for it. It is now Quox.
I support that.
He is officially Quox.
To keep us marching forward. To keep yes. us yeah. marching forward like
so they they are marching forward. They're lost for like 3 days. They have no idea where they are. We get that whole moment with the rack.
I don't like this.
It's very just, it just happens really quickly.
It was but random, but this was one of the moments that made me laugh really hard. When
oh, yeah.
the rack is like, hold on, you can't leave yet because you injured me and I can't open my jaw and so I can't eat you. So I need you to wait.
I need you to chill.
I need you to chill.
I get
until
it.
I'm able to eat you. And he's like, no, you can't. No.
We're not doing that.
I mean, it's a very civilized conversation about very, very, you know, violent
outcomes.
It's like, yes. you hurt me, so now I should be able to hurt you by eating you.
Right, but you have to wait. Like, I'm not ready. I gotta heal. Wait.
Thank goodness for the book tree, because the book tree is the only reason Files knows about the rack and, like, knows what
right.
to do.
He's smart.
To take out the rack. I just have to say my one note in this whole chapter, which I wrote, bomb, what? It's with Captain Buttons. We'll never mention him again. Nevertheless, he says, if the rack catches us and chews us up into small pieces and swallows us, what will happen then? And then Files says, then each small piece will still be alive. I said,
that's
no,
terrifying.
That's, well, he's that he's trying no. so hard, because that's another inconsistency of like, do you live? Do you die? Can you be killed in Oz? It felt like him being like, no, you're still alive. Haha, it's fine.
But that's a fate
that's
worse
terrifying.
Than
terrifying. Yeah, no,
yeah,
thank
I was like,
you.
That is something I never want to feel.
Worse than death.
I never want to feel that. I never want to feel multiply alive. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. like. Ew, fragments. Like, no.
Ew, it reminds me of that scene in Inside Out when they're like traveling and they're made out of like pixels.
Oh.
And they're just like, what? And I was like, that gives me anxiety.
Their glamping skills, though, are great. They all have those white tents that can just like pop out of nowhere. So go, Queen Anne.
Love that. As a child who was obsessed with like miniature things, like the aww. Smaller iPods got, the more excited I got. Like, oh my gosh, how can you make it? I wonder if this was like one of the first time I feel like I've seen this device used before or like it's been used in like fantasy stuff since where like you have a small thing and then you do something with it and then it becomes big. I wonder if this yeah. was like one of the first times. Like I can just imagine the child from 19 when did you say this was 1919? 1913?
No, 1914.
14. 14. Reading this and just being like, what? That sounds incredible.
Whoa.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just I loved reading those descriptions of the
it, it would be very handy. Like I wish every day in New York City that I could just put all my belongings in a little square in my pocket.
Yeah.
Because I hate carrying it all around. So thanks, Bomb.
Same here. And
well,
now
we sally meet, forth.
We meet Betsy. Betsy Braves.
Deja vu. This is exactly what has happened before.
Yeah, we mm-hmm. have exact same moment as Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz of how Betsy kind of crashes onto foreign fairy lands with her mule named Hank, who has a very similar description to Jim the cabbie horse. He is
oh,
a
yeah.
thin little sad-faced mule. Mm-hmm. And I think Baum paints a lot of horse-like creatures or laboring creatures that we used to employ a lot at the turn into the turn of century, and then they started to fade away as very like overused and probably overworked. And it is good that technology has replaced like what we used to do to these animals.
Yeah, I know.
So just feeling a little bit of the Jim story and Hank.
They're
besties. We have no backstory. We learn later she's from Oklahoma, but it's randomly dropped in.
They also like met on this ship. It says they became friends on this ship in the days preceding the storm. It's like, what? Yeah. Whose mule is this?
Mystery. I don't know. It's very vague, and we don't know anything about her family. Why is this child crossing the
doing a transatlantic voyage
by herself?
No idea.
Like, what's happening here? So she feels like a little pirate, like in a fun way.
Yeah, it's just so funny that it's kind of the same exact storyline as
we get to meet flowers that have faces, because it's another thing.
Again,
Baum loves a flower with a face because it feeds into the stage portrayal of having flowers be a chorus.
Gotta get those costumes, you know?
Yes, yes.
One of my favorite moments here, once they do meet the royal gardener, who is like a human man, he's like, I'm a man. And Betsy's like, well, I'm not afraid of a man. Like, get it, Betsy. Okay.
I was singing Wake Up, You Sleepy Heads a lot in this section with like the flowers, just hearing that little chime from the MGM movie. The illustration of the royal gardener is frightening to me. His pitchfork and his really abrasive collar. And he's just as an interesting character who doesn't question anything. Like, his job feels so...
He's scary.
Mundane. And I don't know. Like, they all have these rules they abide to in this Rose Kingdom that make no sense. Like, at all.
They are not for any sort of female leadership.
Yeah.
Hey, not for female leadership at all in this country, which we get to learn after we have like Shaggy enter the picture, because Shaggy is on a quest to find his long lost brother that we get a little bit of backstory on.
What were you going to say, Patrick?
Just, I find it interesting that in a lot of depictions of humanoid flowers in media, they never seem very nice. Like, they're also mean to Alice and Alice in Wonderland, aren't they? Like, why do flowers get such a bad rap
if they feel very like materialistic and just like focused on their looks, you know?
Yes.
I think it's like the poisoned feminine. Like, it's
like, I'm better than you.
Catty girl shit that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't even want the Rose Princess to become a prince. They're like, no, she's a girl. It's like, girls, get it together.
Stand up to yourself. Like, have pride.
It reminds me of my little girls. Some of my little girls I teach in groups. It's either all of them or none of them. And I can't with that, my friends. Like, I'm really trying to get some of my kids. I think this is a new culture and I don't like it that they're all winners or they're all not winners. I'm like, no, sometimes there's one winner. Okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
Sometimes there's one, and you can learn to support that one person. That's important.
You can be supportive.
Too. Yes. Right. Like, that's important.
Just
to
because
be
they
the
succeed.
Of that.
Yeah.
Yes. It makes me so mad. I have to fight this with a lot of my kids. They're like, that wasn't fair, Miss Tara. I was like, did this student just work harder and get and do exactly what I wanted? I have to do that with them. They're like, yes. And I'm like, then it was fair. Next week, maybe that can be you.
Yeah.
That's good. You're teaching them. You are teaching the children of the future.
They're going to be set up for complete heartbreak. Like, there's no way.
Because that's not how the world works.
This is like a utopian school ideology that I'm like, get rid of it. It does not serve these kids. They do not need medals for participating. I'm sorry. Showing up does not deserve a medal. You give that to yourself. That's the medal you give yourself. You don't get that from me, though, from
showing up. Hot takes.
All right.
Oh, you do not get a medal for me from showing up. You know what I mean?
Because you didn't get a medal for showing up as the teacher.
I'm showing up. I just want to point out Shaggy's little backstory that we get for a brief moment on his brother, because this is like new Oz information. He says back in Colorado. Here's another.
Oh my God, state I in the died. Middle of the
country.
He was a miner.
Yeah, where I used to live before I went to Oz. Brother was a miner and dug gold out of a mine. One day he went into his mine and never came out. They searched for him, but he was not there. This is the basis of Floyd Collins, the musical.
Oh my God. It is.
And that is why he is looking for him, because he knows that, oh, like natural disasters and just disappearing entirely usually means it's connected to this fairyland, which is cool. I also think that's a cool way to think about like people who go missing or like unexplainable deaths, is that they enter a new universe, you know? It's like kind 100%. Of like an afterlife band-aid in a weird way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we do get that information, which it's just one little paragraph. That's all we get.
I love that it's Colorado. It's just so random.
And there's just no questioning of like, they like the gardener wants to kill them all for being intruders. This is always like,
he's even very upset.
Even though he's like the only person there who's enforcing these rules. Like,
right. Like who's he answering to?
Yeah, there's no ruler at the moment because no one is ripe enough to be plucked. And these biddies want a male ruler and there's no male ruler.
These biddies!
So that gives our friends the courage to just go ahead and pluck, just like in Dorothy and the Wizard. This has already happened, same Patrick, thing. In another book where they pluck
literally the same
another ruler for another, the same kind of reasons in the Vegetable Kingdom. So they pluck Ozma's cousin, Princess
Ozga,
and the anti-feminists are like,
out. They also have no hearts, which is so sad. They literally have no hearts. So
no love magnet
can't work on them. And this is also where we obviously found out that his brother was captured by the Gnome King, who he explains to us has been renamed Ruggedo. He is now known as the Metal Monarch and owns apparently all the metals hidden in the earth.
And was the renaming also due to rights things or?
No.
So he fell, he and his minions all fell into like a fountain of oblivion. Is that what it's called? And all their memories are like, the waters of oblivion, like all their memories of their, like all, everything they know is wiped clean. They have to like come up with new names.
And so that happened at the end of the last book?
That happened in the Emerald City of Oz, right? Tara?
Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of like two books ago, this happened.
Yeah.
But we were confused because like Calico is still named Calico.
And Jonathan Groff. What's his name?
There's a general Guff, and we call him Jonathan Groff.
He's the same name too.
Oh my God. But anyway, the roses are really rude. They have thorns and they're like, we're going to use our thorns to kick you out.
For whatever reason, the imagery that they used where like he was like, they pick up the leaves from their bottoms and showed their thorns. It just reminded me of like in a, like a gang movie where someone lifts up their shirt to show their gun in their waistband to be like, what?
Which oh my God.
Like it was very, I don't know why. This is like image of these flowers, these very pretty flowers, like lifting up to show their thorns and be like, what?
What's going on now,
Betsy Bobbins, get out. It was very funny to me.
Well, luckily,
oh my God, I'm dead.
There was a drawbridge that they were able to pass over. Thank goodness. Or I guess they would have had to swim. Now? Like, I don't know.
They
have escaped and we get into Polychrome. We have her. She's giving me Home Alone 2 vibes. She's like, I did it again.
She has done this before, honey.
She fell off the rainbow again.
Danced on that rainbow and is stuck on the earth. And I love the little honey moment where she's like, I lost my bow, like B-O-W. And Shaggy Man's like, your bow, like B-E-A-U, like a boyfriend. She's like, no, bitch, get away. My bow, my rainbow.
I don't love it's probably very wholesome. It's just so hard not to see it not wholesome of like Shaggy being like a little flirty with her and she's such a young girl. It's just like that old, I can't sometimes like old men who think they could just flirt and get the ha ha ha.
Yes. Oh my God.
I'm past that point. I'm past you, that.
In New York, that's they're abound. I remember getting my COVID shot and this old man like trying to flirt with this like younger woman in the line.
Yeah.
And no. Like clearly just thinking like because he was older, like it's okay. And it's like, no. I also had a little creepy vibes about the love magnet, which now hearing that that was already a thing in a previous book.
Very helpful.
I wonder how y'all felt just about like this man just having something that like makes people just love him.
Well, I'm upset because at one point, Ozma, right, took the love magnet and hung it over the entrance to the Emerald City so that everyone would like feel love and peace when they enter. And I'm like, yes, that's what it should be used for.
Right.
I'm not really for someone having like every teen witch movie we have seen where someone makes a love potion to make someone fall in love with them. It never goes well. Okay. No.
Not at all.
So I am right there with you. Like, no one should have that much power.
No.
It should be used for the good of all.
Yes.
I will say he doesn't really abuse it. I will give him that.
No, for sure. I mean, there's never a chance where he uses it and is like, I love this person. They can love me back. I'm going to use it, right. You know, like that. It's more
he
just
does come in handy.
To prevent people from wanting to murder
harm them.
Yeah. He really
which would
does,
be great
he,
to have.
He does use it for, like, foe. Essentially.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, he never, like, he didn't test it with Polychrome, thank goodness. Like, then he would become, like, what's his name? Hugh Hefner. Like,
Ew.
No.
Ow.
But moving along, we find out that Princess and Polychrome, they become, like,
they're friends.
Besties. I mean, they're kind of the same in a way, too. Like, they're
fairy-like, and yeah. But now the Rose Princess Ozga, we find out, is mortal. She's no longer a fairy because she's been exiled.
Oh, right.
Sad. Very sad for her.
We don't want you. But guess who we find?
This is where we get our friend, the title character. They come upon this well. Love
useless
it.
Title character.
Yeah. Love you. At first, they like pull up a hoop skirt. LOL. Ha ha ha. For the stage.
And
then for the stage, honeys. And then they're like, it's TikTok. He has these little flashes of light on his head, which is kind of sweet. And he reveals that Ozma saw Shaggy Man in her magic picture and Glinda transported him over to help in their journey. But Ragido found him and got angry and threw him down this well. Violent.
So, question about Glinda's transportation powers. Why?
Yes, sure. Here we are to answer.
Why couldn't
we'll try?
She has just transported Shaggy Man's brother.
No,
to him. It's like the whole. It's basically the first book again where it's like she could have just sent Dorothy home from the beginning. Yes,
because people don't learn that way, and she's a righteous fool. She really is.
She's a little rude. Like she, I could have helped too, but
she disrupts people's lives to make them learn
she's
the hard way.
She's a home wrecker.
She makes people learn the hard way.
I mean, I get it. If she could just do that, then there would be no books.
Maybe she does what's best for people. Like, I'm going to put her in a positive light. Like, she's like, okay, they have to go on this journey. And like, if the Gnome King starts to win this battle, I'll interfere.
Yes.
Yeah, she always can interfere, and she does. That's true.
They always – like, there is never really a real fear in these books of our heroes, whoever are our heroes in whatever book we're in, that they're not going to be okay at the end just because they have Glinda and Ozma and all these magical objects that we are now, like, naming, like, the Oz Infinity Stones but – I think that's Bomb's intention too. He didn't want to ever scare a child to the point of nightmare. And I think that the child can know it's kind of like having like, well, mommy and daddy will fix it no matter what. Like it's like literally that energy is around the books at all time.
TikTok is there and they're like, all right, we're here. But they hear the sound of an army and this is where we get Queen Anne and her army intersecting with our current friends. They stick their flag in the ground. We have conquered this land. But the soldiers, Queen Anne's soldiers, are kind of afraid of what's about to happen. And Anne's like, we're going to conquer you. But Betsy's like, uh-uh, we're not going to be conquered. And this is where we have this whole Anne being like, file, go bind the enemy hand and foot. He's like, I can't do that. Hank attacks. Betsy has to restrain him. Anne is really frustrated and files resigns. There's just like a whole bunch of drama happening here. And this is my favorite part where basically they're like, TikTok, you should be the private soldier because files isn't doing it anymore. And he's like, do I get a salary? Where's my contract?
I wrote, get paid.
What are my rights?
Get that money, TikTok.
Get your money, TikTok.
Get that coin, honey.
We also find out that the people from Oogaboo are called Oogabooites.
Thank you. I needed that to be said out loud.
Also, Files is whispering in Ozga's ear. I wrote, okay.
Budding romance.
Like, is this a romance, correct? Like, whoa. It's never explicitly stated.
He is Jelly Beans jealous when we play spin the bottle with what
he is at the end. He's like, what?
He's like, she has to go kiss. All right.
All right, fine. No, it's really sweet.
He has a crush.
Yeah. And this is one of my also favorite parts. So Shaggy makes that deal where he's like, y'all should help us conquer the Gnome King and we'll split up the jewels. Anne can have one half. The soldiers can have the other half. And the rest can go to TikTok. What? What rest if half and half are already going to other people? It doesn't make sense to me. Tell me that math.
Fractions don't exist in Oz.
Yeah,
I just have to point out the private soldier description that she gives. Must be a terrible fighter and my officers are unable to fight. They are exceptionally brave in commanding others to fight, but could not themselves meet the enemy and conquer. This makes me think of any, like, I think about my time in the service industry. The managers never knew how to do our jobs. Mm. Like, they would panic when they would come join us. And I was like, right, because this is hard.
Because you don't know what's up.
Because these guests that come in are entitled as anything.
Entitled.
And hard to deal with. That made me think of like, oh yeah, I've been in this culture where the people leading can't do your job technically below them, right? They can never even try to do
it. It's a different skill set, right?
Totally. Right.
Well, I loved this moment when Files is like, hey, Ozga, can't you just ask these flowers? They're like your second cousins, right?
Parcel tongue, yeah.
Parcel tongue. And she's like, yeah, which way do we go? Which path are we going to? Because as Patrick referenced earlier, Shaggy Man is like, no one knows where this path leads except the person writing this story, which kind of feels like a horror film, but it's fine. And the flowers are like, go this way. And so they follow through. And then we get to Ruggedo's rage. And we find out kind of under this cave, we find the Gnome King and he's like dressed in splendid robes. He has this fierce crown that has a blood red ruby. And this is where we get that line where we started that he's very unhappy because he owns all these jewels under the ground, but he hates humans because they've taken metals and brought them onto the face of the earth.
I hear you, buddy.
You know.
That was his line that I loved was him saying, I hate everyone and everyone hates me. And that's just,
yeah, he's excellent.
I mean, he's accepted it.
And then his assistant or whoever is like, yeah, that's true. Everyone does hate you.
You're right.
I love how fearful he gets when he hears there's a little girl present and the entourage that is coming, which is like, interesting because it's like, what does he remember from Emerald City? Because they're supposed to have
they're supposed to not remember
but he would have they still been do. He would have still have been memories gone in Oz having to deal with Dorothy and Ozma, but he is so afraid of Dorothy and Ozma, which makes me kind of happy, or just like he, it says jumps
what are they gonna do.
Yeah, he like, I love that, like this you know, nasty male identifying villain is scared of two little girls at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a nice little it's a nice little thing to see side by side.
Turning on its head.
But right? He wants to have some fun with our friends who are quote unquote invading. They are invading. I mean, they're there on a worthy task to get back the Shaggy Man's brother.
Bro.
So they use Calico's magnetic rubber wire to like do wild. Some tricks. They do this whole water trick thing that they outsmart
Well, yeah, Calico has like
Files is able to understand how to outsmart it. There's no rubber over here. Like, he's able to get them around things.
Right. Yeah. Like, Calico has this tube that kind of like curves and curves and curves, and they can all go through it. And then they're in rubber country where everyone kind of is like flying around. Like, Polychrome is dancing, bouncing off of all of this rubber.
But they can walk on the water, and they like they figure that out. This section is very muddy in my brain.
I don't remember a lot of it, I will admit.
There's a lot that's packed into these chapters. This is a false way of trying to get them, and it does not work.
Yeah.
And then they finally get them down the hollow tube, which feels like my stomach would curl down this long, long.
This is a long journey.
Goes to the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm. And Calico is the one who's like, remember what happened last time with TTU2?
Yeah, he's like, please don't do this. This is a bad idea. He's like,
this is not going to be good. They summon their long-eared hearer, and he listens, and he discovers, like, this is what they're trying to do. They're going to come steal back his brother.
Calico is like, I need to get another job soon.
Calico!
This isn't going to go well. I know it, so I need a letter of recommendation.
He writes a letter of recommendation. I'm dead.
I also was like, have you guys, I wrote a note to ask you guys, have you ever fibbed or faked a resume or a letter of recommendation? Have you ever fibbed or faked?
I mean, I definitely remember.
Have you ever said lead in this show and you were...
I was applying for colleges and having to create a resume that was not a performance-based resume. We definitely fudged like a couple of things that like I was a part of and maybe I went to once, but I was claiming that like I was a member or like I volunteered doing this thing, like just to make stuff sound a little bit better.
To fluff, just to fluff it.
So I wasn't
just
like
a little fill it out, you know.
They weren't full out blatant lies, but like you know,
just like a little.
Like, you know, there are a couple of things that like I said that I did at my church or at my father's church that like we probably did as a group.
But you're like, I did this solely by myself.
Yes. This I was the president.
Yeah, like I headed this up.
I mean, I think we all have, right?
Yeah. I've never like lied or said I did a show because I'm a horrible liar, and lying, like straight up lying, makes me ill. I know I'm so moral. It makes me ill. No, I'm just not good at it. But I hate asking people for letters of recommendation. I don't know why. It makes me, I'm like, I don't know. It's a little awkward. Like, do you want to write this letter? Am I putting you out? So I have like, I have had a friend who also like, I had a friend who I babysat for write me a letter of recommendation. I was like, yeah, I did childcare. You know, you just kind of make it sound like more legit than perhaps it was.
That's what it is. It's like giving people the words they want to hear so they can trust you. It goes back to that.
This was the leader of this child care organization that I worked for.
You're like child care. Yeah, you're like child care expert. Like you're just like trying to make words.
And it's like my friend.
y'all, in the chess tutoring world, let's be real. Your girl is sharing some.
Your girl?
She is sharing some just sweetener on her chest.
Ariana Grande sweetener.
Yeah.
No, like just sweeten so parents up. Can like, it's mostly so parents can like back off and just trust me. Like that's all. And like I answer their questions pretty honestly, but I also cater it to what I know they want to hear.
Right.
Which also is a little dishonest.
Being a businesswoman.
Yes.
Though.
Yes. And like I know they just want to hear this one thing, so I'll like cater it. But like my husband would not have gotten all his, like, you know, climb up in bartending if he didn't lie and say he was a trained bartender. He's not.
Well, that's the thing, especially with like restaurants and service industry. Sometimes
you have
like,
to have experience.
You have to have experience in order to do the job. Yeah. And you're like, but where am I going to get the experience?
Yeah.
So. Getting now into this terrible tumble through a tube. terrible. It reminds me, of course, of our journey into the center of the earth previously with 100%. Dorothy and the Wizard. Lots of like just thematic throwbacks to that book because we are cutting through the core of the universe again. Like
literally,
it's like it journey. Is a donut.
Well, I know it's pretty fast, an hour to go through the earth. Got it.
How they flop out is pretty hilarious. Like, would love to see a film cinematic version of this. Like, I really do want to see the Oz books given a cinematic justice, like really, really like done. I think in the style of the series of Unfortunate Events was done on Netflix. Like, if it's like a little,
that'd be so
like,
fun.
You know, like there should be a element of darkness because the Oz books are dark in a way. Not really. Yeah. Like, there's just like, you know, there's scary
there could
characters.
Be. Yeah.
Yeah. But just honestly, just be truthful to the books because the comedy is queen, I think, in the books.
Yeah.
But they land in the garden of what seems to be the garden of some great prince, they say in the book. And then
poor
we have
TikTok
more.
Falls into a fountain, which is
TikTok
not good
is
for
beaten
his machinery.
Up. He is like just junk being beaten up. Like it's really
he needs to be put in the bag of rice, like immediately. Yes.
I know, immediately. Turn off and turn back on.
Poor TikTok. And that maybe that's why this book should be called TikTok of Oz.
He's like the unsung hero, yeah.
He suffered the most on this show.
He did.
But we get more invisible people, and like I'm not a fan of invisible people.
I thought of you. I was like, Tara's probably sad that there are more invisible speakers.
But who do you think I'm a fan of?
Titty titty titty.
No! Get out. Who like they're all like in Oz lore like really afraid of him, so the stories that must be going around about Jinjin is like he is horrifying.
He's bad
his reputation
it sounds
think is
like
way
he
worse.
Is
yeah he's mm-hmm. not as bad as he seems. He's just very private and does not want to be interfered with, wants to keep his invisible kingdom separated from everyone else. But
I think you like this peculiar person, Tubekins.
No, not Tubekins.
No.
Come on.
Who do you love?
The Maidens of Light.
The dragon? Oh, the Maidens of Light.
I love it. I mean, this is another moment where
the
I
Fellowship
want, like,
of Fairies.
I want a song to be sung about all of them. Like, we have sunlight, we have moonlight, we have starlight, we have daylight, we have firelight, and we have Electra because electricity has always existed, according to this lore.
Thomas Edison.
Thomas Edison who?
I know, they're like, no, electricity's always been around. This was such a cool moment.
I love this.
I'm obsessed. I was like, we need a whole other book about these wonderful fairies.
Yeah. And so they're new in this book. We have not met them before.
They're new.
The fairies of light. So like they hold purpose to like us, right? Like I guess they're in control of the experience of light from what I gather. So they have pretty big jobs. Like they make me think of Carousel the musical, the star characters.
Yeah.
What is his name?
I don't know.
The star.
You know these mystical characters. Yeah, these mystical characters that just
where you're like,
up.
Oh, you're kind of like a spirit. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're like the guardian of this thing, which I love. But we get this really cool dragon history too. They have dragons.
I know, I love that.
All of their gowns. The dragon was the first living creature ever made. Therefore, the dragon is the oldest and wisest of living things. And the original dragon is still alive and well in this kingdom. Which, does this kingdom have a name? Is it just Jinjin? Makes me want a Jinjin like to put in my mouth. You know those Jinjins?
A Jinjin.
Delicious. Those little ginger candies. I want a Jinjin.
I really like this kingdom because they even say earlier on, like, if anyone who comes through the forbidden tube must be tortured for 9 days and 10 nights and then thrown back into the tube. But it is wise to disregard laws when they conflict with justice. And it seems that you and your followers did not disobey our laws willingly, being forced into the tube by Rekido. Therefore, the Gnome King is alone to blame and he alone must be punished. I'm like, thank you for like having some gray area and not just being like, we must punish you because you came through this tube. It's like, we are victims of a crime.
Very different from the Rose Kingdom. I like how he compares and contrasts these different lands in Oz and shows that, you know, not everybody's on the same page.
Right.
No, not everyone's on the same page. And we get to make our decisions of, I think, what we deem as good and bad. I think that's always kind of a theme in Oz, and even more so now with like people going off and creating other universes. Like Wicked obviously is about that. Like what is good, what is bad. But it's still even in the core of this book. I mean, not so much, I guess, with the witches. They were very clear in the books to be good or bad. But with a lot of the different people, I think Baum was always kind of grappling with, we have so many different kinds of people in America. How do we make this work? It's not working. Like, and we've talked about, like, we wonder what his feelings were at this time, because he has also had his hand in being racist as well. And it's, I wonder, though, I have a feeling that it wasn't, that he grappled with it. Like, he was trying to make sense of what he was seeing happen to people, and like, how could lots of different groups of people and creatures coexist? I don't know. Let me make Oz. Because that's what Oz really is.
It is very beautiful in that way. Us,
I think, and it succeeds better than we do at making it happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I think about that kingdom Utensia that was in Emerald City of Oz. Patrick, this one's the wildest one, because they're just like, they don't serve Ozma. They're like, nope, but they still are there, and they're kind of just letting them, because they're like, they're literally Beauty and the Beast Lumiere objects. Like, they're just kitchen objects.
Utensils.
Running wild. Like, totally the cow jumped over the moon style. I guess Ozma's like, you know what? They're not really going to hurt me, so like, let me just let them be in this area. They're fine.
It's interesting, right? And was it the last book where we find out, like, some lands have their own rulers just for their own minds, but they know that they actually don't have power? Like, it all does come from Ozma.
Yeah.
It's weird. So it's like, he's also giving us a glimpse into how certain societies are setting up how they rule and how they run.
Right.
I don't know if he's even telling us, like, this one's better, this one's the right way. It's just a bunch of different options.
He leaves it up to the kids reading to make up their minds, and hopefully they come to the right conclusions about which are good.
Hopefully
and
they
not.
Don't love Ruggedo.
Right, like, right.
See what he's
what
doing.
Do you mean? I love him.
I love when he kicks people in the shins.
I love him.
Oh my god. Thank you so much for listening to Down the Yellow Brick Pod. If you are feeling fresh with your fingertips, scroll on over to Apple Podcasts and now Spotify, woot woot, to leave us a glowing rate and review. It's a big help.
Each person who leaves us an Apple review will be entered to win our end of the season Oz giveaway, including a gift basket of Aussie book goodies that, trust me, you aren't going to want to miss.
All previous reviews will also be considered in our entries. We see you.
Further fun and ways to support us can be found at our Etsy swag shop, from Good Witch Trouble merch to our new Fab Four of Oz icon collection, with a big shout out to our graphic designer, Maddie Frank. Find us also on Patreon and Instagram via Down the Yellow Brick Pod, as well as on Venmo at Down the YBP. We always appreciate a tip here.
Let's escape to Oz soon, okay?
Okay, Auntie M.